You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last year, the New York Times estimated that 1.7 to 3.4 million American women are married to or involved with men who have sex with men. That estimate, which is widely varying, derives from a study that found that nearly 4% of American men who'd ever been married had engaged in homosexual activities in the previous 5 years. Such marriages are not just artifacts of the closeted 1950s. Dina Matos-McGreevy was a recent prominent example, as she stood by her husband when he resigned from his job as New Jersey governor. But then he said the words, "I am a gay American," and that changed not only his life, but hers and their daughters. In a new book, Silent Partner, Dina Matos-McGreevy tells her side of the story. It's published by Hyperion, and I'm very pleased that she was able to come by our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Now, there are some very famous women who share at least some aspects of your situation. Constance Wilde, Oscar Wilde's wife, Phyllis Gates, Rock Hudson's wife, Linda Porter, Cole Porter's wife, Renata Blauel, Elton John's wife. But some of those women knew in advance that their husbands were gay or bisexual. Did you have even the slightest inkling before he made that admission during his resignation?
No, I did not. And people ask me, almost on a daily basis, how can you not know? But nothing. There was nothing in our private life. Nothing that, was a red flag for me. I just had no idea, no suspicion. And as you mentioned some of the statistics, there are, millions of marriages that break up because one of the spouses, and it's not just
sometimes
men.
It's the men who discover their wives are having affairs with women.
Absolutely. And I've met several of those people over the last, few months. And they all say the same thing. They had no clue. It just came out of the blue. One day, they were either, sat down by their spouse and told, I'm gay or I'm homosexual or I have homosexual tendencies. And these people just have no clues. And some of them have been married 30 years and it's 20, 30 years later and two or three children later.
There are even online support groups and 10 to 20,000 wives alone have contacted them. And the numbers are increasing because a lot of the women are in their 20s and 30s.
Yes, there are a lot of. I just last week I met a woman in her 30s, and also a man in his mid 30s whose wife just came out to him.
In your book, you say that many people have come forward to offer support. Have you also received angry letters?
No, I have not. You always expect people who to side with your partner, but no, nothing. I've gotten just this past week. I've got several letters from gay men who have been absolutely supportive and think that his behavior, was self-serving and he has done a disservice to the gay community.
Because there are many gay people, male and female, who feel that you should be open about this sort of thing. Deception is bad.
Absolutely. These people know who they are. I mean, this is not something that's learned. I believe that they're born, you're either born heterosexual or homosexual or with homosexual tendencies. So this is not something that, they decide overnight that they're going to become homosexuals. They know, and they don't often recognize, the collateral damage of coming out of the closet.
But as we've seen with some of the scandals within the Catholic Church, people sometimes actually fight it really hard, and they use religion as a way of trying to get themselves past it. You and Jim McGreevy were both practicing Catholics when you got married.
Yes, we were.
Although he had been married before?
He had been married before. We were practicing Catholics, but we actually were married in the Episcopal Church because the Catholic faith does not allow, for remarriage unless there's an annulment. So we were married in the Episcopalian Church. And I have, just 2 weeks ago, I met someone who is still with her husband, and she went to a support group meeting, the Straight Spouse Network, and she says, "We're trying to work it out because he's going for therapy and trying all different types of, whether it's through his faith, to try to fight this." You know, I find it difficult to believe that, you know, he will be able to you know, lead a straight lifestyle. But there are people who try to do it.
Well, have you spoken to people within the church? There are other churches as well that believe that through faith you can get past this. You seem to be suggesting that this is something that is at least somewhat genetic in nature, well, and it would be almost impossible, whatever you use, to get yourself.
Well, that's my personal opinion. I do think it's genetic, and I think, you know, you can't fight nature. But there are also, you know, people born again Christians, there are different religions who offer services to these people, you know, to keep them straight.
Well, do you think that he kept closeted because of his faith or because of the other circumstances of your life?
Well, I believe that he stayed in the closet because he wanted to be governor and possibly president. If he had not been blackmailed, I believe that he would be seeking the Democratic nomination for president.
Well, he also kept this from his parents.
He kept it from his parents, from, you know,
all his
friends.
His parents are very religious.
His parents are very religious. But he was married once. He tried it once. It didn't work out. He should have never gotten married again. I mean, he didn't need to be married to become governor. I mean, the current governor of New Jersey is a prime example. He's not a married man, and he was able to achieve that office in spite of it.
My guest is Dina Matos McGreevy. Her book, Silent Partner, A Memoir of My Marriage, is published by Hyperion. So what do you know about the first marriage? Why did it end?
Well, it's the first marriage is still a mystery. When I asked Jim why his first marriage broke up, he said that his wife didn't like politics. She couldn't stand the schedule. She didn't enjoy the you know, the political game, the campaigning, and she was also from British Columbia and was homesick, and she decided to go back home.
You, on the other hand, just loved being the governor's wife, didn't you?
I enjoyed politics.
You said that you thought you were living the American dream until Jim made his announcement.
Right, right. Well, you know, being First Lady of the state of New Jersey was an opportunity to serve people. And, you know, in that position, I was able to help fundraise for various charities and get involved with different healthcare organizations, which is, you know, one of my passions is healthcare and promoting better healthcare, both for children and adults. So I was able to do that. They gave me a platform to do that, to raise money for cancer. So it was a great privilege. I didn't particularly like the politics. You know, I had been involved in politics at a local level, but when you get to that, you know, that higher level, to the state level, it's a very dirty business.
Mm-hmm. And he had, as you said, ambitions to go on to run for president. So
yes,
you were in store for something pretty rough.
Right, right. And
did he really? Well, you have no way of knowing. Did you ever talk about it? Jim, do you think that somewhere down the line, I'm sure you heard later, there were rumors. I know people who have been reporters in New Jersey who said, oh, we kind of knew.
Right, right.
Don't you think somewhere along the line something would have come out?
Well, I think that if he had run for president, it would have come out. And, you know, people ask me, how could you not know? But, you know, when you're married to someone in a powerful position, whether it's a politician or CEO of a large organization, there are always rumors and innuendo. And if you're going to chase after those, you're not going to do anything else.
Did you ever speak to his ex-wife?
No. No, he always kept us apart. He wanted me to have no relationship with her or even his daughter. It wasn't until we were married for about a year and a half when I finally met his daughter from a previous marriage.
And he did not fight to gain custody of her when that divorce occurred.
No,
but he's fighting to gain custody of your daughter?
Yes. His other daughter lives with her mother in British Columbia, and he never, in fact, I wanted to have a relationship with her. I wanted her to spend vacation with us and to spend holidays with us, and he never allowed that. And I believe it's because his ex-wife either suspected or knew, and he wanted to keep us apart.
How much does your daughter, who's five or six, isn't she?
She's five.
How much does she understand about what happened to the life that she knew?
Well, she was 2.5 when we separated.
So it's fairly early.
So it was fairly early. She, like any child of divorced or separated parents, you know, they want their parents reunited, and, you know, hope that at some point that will happen. So she's dealing with the issues that other children have. And it's not a matter of, you know, whether the parents are separated because one of the parents has come out. I'm fortunate that she was young enough, but she does understand that her parents don't live together, and I think she's finally accepting the fact that we're never going to live together again.
But she must hear other things from her classmates.
Fortunately, she doesn't. The children in her class are, you know, pretty sheltered, and the parents are very respectful of, you know, of our privacy. So I don't believe she would have told me if she'd heard something.
My guest is Dina Matas-McGreevy, who's executive director of the Columbus Foundation, an organization charged with promoting health and wellness at Columbus Hospital in Newark, New Jersey. She's written a memoir of her marriage called Silent Partner, and it's published by Hyperion. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Dina Matas-McGreevy. She's written a memoir called Silent Partner. It is published by Hyperion. How did you and Jim first meet?
We first met, we were introduced by a friend at a local fundraising dinner, and I had heard of Jim through a mutual friend, but I didn't know much about him. I knew he was the mayor of a local town. I had no idea that he had any intentions of running for governor until about a half a year later. And we met. We didn't see each other for another year or so, and then we saw each other again, and you know, started dating. We dated 4 years before we got married.
So it was a long courtship.
Yes.
And didn't he have his friends ask you to marry him first to see what your reaction would be?
Yeah, I didn't feel like I was in high school, but.
You were grown-ups at this point.
Looking back now, you know, there were obviously signs that I missed. And one of the signs was how he proposed to me. First, he had a friend of his ask me if I would marry him if he asked. And then when he actually proposed to me, or gave me the ring, I should say, because he never really proposed, never asked a question, he just put a ring in front of me and said, well, what do you think? It's a pretty significant ring. You know, he wanted to bring a driver along when we went off, you know, to get engaged. So, you know, looking individually, those events didn't really mean anything. They were odd, yes, but, you know, they didn't mean anything. But now looking back at all that happened, obviously, you know, those were signs.
Especially since the driver was 22 years old
right.
And kind of hot.
Right.
Earlier this month, you filed a lawsuit against Mr. McGreevy because you say he knew that he was bisexual when he proposed marriage during that run for governor, 2000-2001. Do you really believe that he did so out of what the suit calls raw political ambition?
Yes. In fact,
you don't feel that he loved you at all?
Well, looking back, you know, I question everything, what was real and what wasn't real. About a month after his resignation speech, I found some papers which were probably the outline of a book that he was about to write. And, you know, right there on a sheet of paper in black and white, he said, I married my wife for political gain. Obviously, that was very painful, and it's, you know, very difficult to accept because, you know, everything that you thought you had was obviously not there, and you question, you know, every vacation, every word he said, but I truly believe that, you know, he was so ambitious that he wanted to be governor and possibly president, and he needed a wife.
What does his book, The Confessions, say? Does it offer evidence that he willfully and intentionally misrepresented and or concealed his sexual preference to induce you to marry him?
Well, no, he doesn't mention that in his book, but he also never mentioned in his book or in subsequent interviews that I knew. He's now claiming that I knew that, you know, he was homosexual, which is, you know, a lie, obviously. He just claimed that it was, you know, his religious upbringing that kept him in the closet.
And you're saying that you really didn't know, even though he was... he called this conference, this press conference, that he was gay at that point? I mean, you were supporting him against his blackmailing?
Well, he actually, till this day, he's never actually said the words to me, I am gay. He's never told me he was gay.
This is like Rudy Giuliani calling a press conference to announce that he was leaving Donna Hanover?
Right. Right. He was, he gave me the news in three cowardly installments. He started on a Monday, and the last time we sat down and had a conversation about this was on a Wednesday. First told me that he was being blackmailed. The second day he was discussing, you know, what to do, what his options were. And then the third day, the day before, the evening before he made his announcement, he said, I'm confused about my sexuality. I think I might be gay.
So you went there still thinking, well, maybe this marriage can be saved.
Well, in the following morning, you know, within 12 hours or so, he resolved his confusion, and he handed me a copy of his speech, of the speech that he was going to deliver about 2 hours before the press conference. And that's when I read the words, I am a gay American. And he was with a friend of his, and I looked at him and said, what do you mean you're a gay American? You think you are? And he never answered me. His friend said, well, that's what he is, and we have to accept it.
We've gotten some emails from listeners. Can I read a few of them to
you? Sure.
Maybe you can answer a couple of questions. This man says, I applaud her tremendously. I'm a gay man who has met many, many closeted married men who make a mockery of their marriages on a daily basis. I've had clandestine affairs with a few. A closeted married man makes fools of his wife and children, making them believe they are someone they are not. But while there is collateral damage in coming out, staying married to avoid the turmoil and perpetuating the lie does no one any favors. Closeted men also make a mockery out of other openly gay men, hundreds of thousands now dead. They steal the benefits of a life that they did not earn, an extraordinary selfish lifestyle. But then another person says that the real concern that he has is that there was a lot of corruption in New Jersey during the McGreevy years, and wonders what you know about that.
Well, I didn't think that Jim was corrupt, and even as I was writing the book, I still gave him the benefit of the doubt. But I do question his actions and why he, you know, all of a sudden resolved his confusion and said, I'm a gay American. And he's hiding behind, you know, being a homosexual to avoid, you know, perhaps being prosecuted. Because if he didn't do anything wrong, and I believe, you know, it's possible that he personally didn't do it, but he obviously allowed corruption to... his closest allies to be involved in corrupt activity.
Another listener asked, what do you think about Hillary Clinton standing by her man?
Well, you know, I can't judge anyone. Everyone, you know, we all make decisions based on the facts that we have and also how we feel about the person. If someone told me, you know, a year or 2 years prior to Jim coming out that I would stand there by his side, I would think they were crazy. You never know how you're going to react in the situation. But, you know, it appears to me that, you know, they had a love that endured, you know, that scandal.
And when did you know that it was over? When he said that during that press conference?
I think I knew that it was over the night before the the press conference.
But you were going to stand by him one more time.
Well, I was going to stand by him because I had done nothing wrong. I had nothing to hide. And I also thought of my daughter, and I didn't want her, you know, 10 or 20 years down the line to say, Mommy, you know, this was the most difficult day of Daddy's life, and you didn't stand by them, by him. He's her father.
Your suit against Jim also includes charges of libel and extreme cruelty. How did he libel you, and what kind of extreme cruelty?
Well, he's now claiming that I knew all along that, you know, he was gay and it was a contrived marriage. And his behavior, both, you know, after the press conference with, you know, threats and you know, his behavior since with you know, trying to take my daughter away from me, have resulted in, you know, in a lot of pain and emotional distress.
Now, he has moved in with his boyfriend, partner, Mark O'Donnell, who's a financier. How long after you separated did he begin dating him?
I believe it was about 9 months. I don't know when he actually started the relationship.
In court papers, you've questioned his judgment for having a giant photo of a nude man in the bedroom he shares with Mark O'Donnell. Did your daughter tell you about that photo?
I actually learned about that photograph from a newspaper article. And you know, when my lawyer addressed it with his attorneys, he never responded. He ignored the letter. And you know, we were close to reaching an agreement with respect to our divorce, but he would not agree that that was improper. And he wanted me to, you know, just go ahead and sign an agreement. And I had concerns about what my daughter was being exposed to. And I didn't know until I saw it printed in the tabloids later on. I didn't know exactly what type of photograph it was. After I read about it, I asked my daughter about a photograph. And she says, yes, it's a man on a beach. She'd never told me because apparently she knew that she should not have, that shouldn't have been in the home and she should not have been exposed to it.
A listener asks, how can we encourage people and children to present themselves as honestly as possible in a country where so many policies promote ideals against the support of homosexuality?
Well, I think, as you know, certainly as a parent, I would encourage my daughter to be, you know, the person that she's intended to be and to be true to herself. And I hope that other parents will do that. And I think, you know, I hope that, you know, in this day and age that we will not see the destruction of lives like, you know, my own life and the millions of people who have been married to a homosexual spouse. I think that you have to promote, you know, awareness, openness, and the most important aspect to that is to have communication with your children.
Would it have been possible if Jim had come to you at some point and said, you know, I'm really bisexual and I would like at times to have other relationships? Would it have been possible for you to have kept your marriage going under those circumstances?
That works for other people. It wouldn't have worked for me, no.
So when did you return to work? How long before you were able to start rebuilding your life?
Well, I think I returned to work within 2 weeks. While I was First Lady, I maintained the full-time job and was raising my daughter and obviously fulfilling my duties as First Lady. I think it was about 2 weeks after that. I could not leave. I felt like a prisoner. I couldn't leave the house because, you know, reporters were in camp and photographers were climbing trees to try to get a glimpse of us in photographs. And I finally decided, I felt like I was in prison. I finally decided that I had to go back to work and try to resume, you know, a normal life or as normal as possible.
Well, can you resume a normal life after this kind of public trauma?
It's very difficult, but, you know, writing this book has been very cathartic, and the support, and also, you know, when I wrote the book, I thought I was doing it for myself and for my daughter. I now realize that I've done it, you know, for a lot of people, that it's been very helpful to both. It's interesting. This last week, I got three or four letters from gay men who have read it and thought that it was helpful. And people who have been in similar circumstances have thanked me for giving them a voice because they feel isolated. One woman said to me last week, when my husband came out of the closet, I went into the closet. And that happens very frequently. And, you know, if this book will help those people to realize that they haven't done anything wrong and then shouldn't go into hiding, I think it's, you know, it's very rewarding for me personally.
Dina Matos-McGreevy, her book, Silent Partner, A Memoir of My Marriage, published by Hyperion. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.